Hey y'all, welcome to Biscuits and Jam from Southern Living. I'm your host, Sid Evans. And for this episode, I got to sit down here at the Southern Living offices with the chef, author, and owner of Atlanta's Bomb Biscuit Company, Erica Council. Erica grew up in Durham, North Carolina, though she spent plenty of time down the road in Goldsboro, where her grandmother ran the church kitchen like a five-star restaurant, even as she raised funds for civil rights. Erica's talent runs deep on both sides of her family tree. Her paternal grandmother, Mildred Council, better known as Mama Dip, ran a legendary restaurant in Chapel Hill for more than 50 years, feeding everyone from college kids to presidents. For a long time, Erica wasn't sure she wanted to follow the same path, but of course, life had other plans. A few cooking side gigs turned into pop-ups, and those turned into a thriving breakfast business. She's now a James Beard nominee and the author of Still We Rise, a love letter to the Southern Biscuit, which I've got to say makes her just about the perfect guest for this show. Today, we're talking about her family's legacy, the lessons baked into her journey, and how a simple biscuit can tell a much bigger story. All that and more on this week's Biscuits and Jam. Well, Erica Council, welcome to Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you for having me. That's my thing, Biscuits and Jam.
I know. I don't think I've ever had a more appropriate guest
truly,
to Biscuits and Jam.
Truly. I'm like, yeah, that's me. That's the story of my life.
Well, I mean, you were just here for the Southbound Food Festival.
Yeah, it was
and,
the first time.
So we're doing this live in Birmingham in our little office studio here.
Yeah, it's exciting. I love it. Walk through the test kitchen. I feel like I should have made biscuits.
You should have.
I know. I feel bad. I'm coming empty-handed. It's like, should I get some flour and butter and, you know, throw some stuff together maybe real quick?
We have plenty of flour and butter here.
I was going to say, truly, yes. Truly. I have to come back. It's only 2 hours. I'll come back.
You got to come back.
I'll come back.
But you were serving biscuits yesterday.
Yeah, fried chicken.
At something called the Funk Brunch, which is part of the Southbound Food Festival. And I was so bummed because I got there late and I missed having one of your biscuits. But
listen, the line never stopped until I didn't have anything.
They disappeared. They were all
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, give us a sec because we were frying the chicken outside. And it was like, okay, well, we would batch and fry it in batches. And we just couldn't keep up with the line. It's great, but hey, you missed it.
Yeah, well.
Again, I'll come back. I'll bring it back.
Okay, you got to come back. So, Erica, I want to hear a little bit about your hometown where you grew up. You're from Eastern North Carolina.
Yeah, born and raised in Durham.
So, tell me a little bit about your hometown and the house and the neighborhood where you grew up.
Yeah, well, so I grew up in Durham, but I spent a lot of time 45 minutes away in Goldsboro, North Carolina, which my mom was a single mother, and her mother did a lot for me. She'd pick me up from school and take me to Goldsboro, which is home of Wilbur's Barbecue.
Yeah, right.
So Eastern North Carolina barbecue, the best you can eat. So I guess my neighborhood, I would say, was more Goldsboro, even though I went to school in Durham and grew up there. You know, I just spent every weekend, every holiday. So just being in that area, it's a small town, barbecue is king, and barbecue and Jesus, I'll say. So, I mean, when we weren't, eating or just hanging out, we were at church. So, you know, my life kind of existed around these amazing church ladies who baked and cooked and ran the church kitchen like a 3-star Michelin restaurant. And that was all I was really exposed to. And the opposite side of that was when I did spend time with my dad and got to Chapel Hill, I saw Mildred Council, who was my paternal grandmother, Mama Dip, and just running this phenomenal empire of a Southern restaurant. So my sort of childhood, even all the way into adulthood, I was surrounded by these phenomenal women, some in the culinary industry, some just culinary geniuses in their homes, who cooked well. And I just knew that even if I didn't go into this business, because that was never my plan, I was always going to be a great cook. Because I didn't want anyone to talk about me like they would talk about those. I hear them talking about ladies coming in whenever, oh, no, you don't want to eat her food. It's no good. I just knew I had to do whatever I needed to do to make really great biscuits. I needed to know how to make things like caramel cake, coconut cake, and pies. Those are the first things. And fried chicken. So, like, those are things that all the women, even men who could do those things, had great adulation, and that was going to be my story, too.
Just to have some status in the family, and you needed to be able to
cook.
Just
in general, I didn't want anyone to talk about me on a Saturday afternoon, like, oh, gosh, she brought that potato salad. It was terrible. Those are the conversations I used to hear just sitting around as a little girl, like these beautiful church ladies in these hats talking about, oh, yeah, she's nice, but that girl can't cook no pie. So I was like, no, that would never be me. They're going to say, yeah, she can cook.
So they could throw some shade.
They could throw some shade in the best way. Bless her heart. She cooked that cake in a casserole dish. But yeah, I was never going to be on the negative side of that. I was going to be on positive. But yeah, I mean, experience wise, I saw that and then I saw my mom who didn't cook. She'll listen to this and be like, I cooked. But no, she didn't cook, but she went to grad school and she was working at IBM as an engineer. And I was just like, okay, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a great cook, but I'm also going to be an engineer. I'm going to be in corporate America. I mean, I just was always in awe of, even when we were struggling, her as a single mother, she never exposed that to me. It was always like, no, we're fine. Everything's fine. We're going to do what we have to do. And that feeling, just having that power behind you and saying, I'm going to persevere.
A lot of strong women.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Erica, you grew up surrounded by cooks.
Yeah.
And you were in a lot of kitchens. You experienced a lot of kitchens.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, when you think about all those kitchens, was there one kitchen that really comes to mind as the place where you learn the most or where you spent the most time? And if you could kind of paint a picture of that kitchen for me, like, what does it look like? What does it smell like? What was happening in that kitchen on a typical night?
Absolutely. So the side door is where you came through, because only the pastor could come through the front door. So that brought you through to the kitchen that was always painted yellow. It was always just buttery yellow. And towards the late 90s, she got a little funky and painted the cabinet doors pink. So it was pink and yellow, but it was always this sort of butter yellow color. And just the warmth that radiated from that kitchen. But the main thing that I always bore witness to was she never turned anyone away. Hmm. So like when she made stuff, she made plates. You would come through that side door. I got some barbecue chicken or like, so not just the cooking, but that feeling of you can cook, but how does this make someone feel? Not just the food you're making, but just feeding them and being that sort of support and kindness. That was just something she exuded in everything she did. And I just know for me growing up, I mean, when she would be cooking, like I tell a story in my cookbook, the first time I tried to make biscuits, which was an epic fail. And they just sort of burn and it was too much everything in it. So like it was spilling into the oven and the fire alarm went off, but I was just trying to impress her. Like I wanted her to see that.
This is your mother's mother.
My mother's mother. Yeah. And, obviously they burn. She runs up into the kitchen, starting to get the alarm off. Oh God, what's going on? And in the end, we sat down and she ate the biscuit. She got some jam and she said, we're going to look at this. We're going to see what you made, where you made the mistake. You're going to try it again. We're going to eat them. We're going to taste them so you can tell the difference, what's wrong, what you don't like. And like that lesson has sat with me in everything that I do. So like all the mistakes or things that I've done wrong, like I always just sit down. I remember that. So it wasn't just the food that we cooked. She was a phenomenal baker, too. So not just what we cooked and baked, but also the lessons that came, the story she told about history that I always thought were so like, wow, that's crazy. It ended up actually being a true story. Like she was just kind of telling me this as she cooked. So those are things like when I'm making something, when I'm making coconut cake or a lemon cake that she would always make, I think about, oh, you would slice these up and wrap them in plastic and sell them. We were raising money for the civil rights movement. So just those kind of things when I'm baking some of her older recipes, I just remember those stories she told me. So it would definitely be her kitchen that I have the fondest memory of.
Yeah. It sounds like she taught you a lot about hospitality as well as cooking, just kind of taking care of people.
Indirectly, yeah. She did. I mean, she definitely, as a child of the South, I mean, really honed in on being a leader, if you can, and anything that you have, you need to be able to pull as you climb. And especially in the African American community, it was just very much, if you have something, if you have an opportunity, you should never turn around and not see anyone that looks like you. Hmm. Or you haven't done a good job. So, you know, definitely it's something I've carried with me, because that was just something she carried and was very, very, adamant about in everything. So what have you done to help better the community that you're a part of? So, you know, now in my restaurant, I'm always looking for people, you know, who, anything you need, like, I'm here, come to me. And that always doesn't work out in my favor, but it's something I'm kind of stuck on.
So there was a real connection between food and the civil rights movement for her. And she said she was raising money. Well, she was selling baked goods to raise money.
Which, you know, hearing these stories was just something that a lot of black households did. You know, so hearing her tell me those stories, and then, you know, growing up and hearing other people's stories about their grandparents and things like that, who were also involved in activism and things of that nature. But yes, she told stories of going to the March on Washington. They raised money to get buses to go to that. So those type of stories that she would tell me, most of the time it was in the kitchen as we cooked or baked, and all of those really kind of just remained with me.
Do you have any of her tools from the kitchen, like a skillet or a bowl?
I do. I have her cast iron. I don't use it. It's funny, oddly enough, she had some of her mother's sheet pans when you would buy a cake mix, and they would come with the sheet pan, 45 cents for this. So I have some of those pie pans and like a couple of sheet pans. I don't use them anymore. They're just kind of sitting up on the, I do have one bundt pan that she would always make her cakes in. I still use that. But yeah, I have all of her crystal. She always had these beautiful crystal dishes that she would, like her deviled egg pan, her deviled egg crystal. I've never seen anyone have so many deviled egg dishes. Like what were you doing?
How many different kinds do you need?
I know. I have 12 of the ones she had. I think my mother has the rest, and like they're pink. She has some of the 70s green, you know, and everyone's getting the green looking, glass dishes. The Pyrex the other day, it's funny. My son was like, what are we going to do with the whole dishes? And I'm like, they're not whole dishes. They're deviled. I'm explaining him what deviled egg is. And it's funny because he's allergic to eggs.
Oh.
So he's never had a deviled egg. So I was like, I feel I've deprived you. You can't eat deviled eggs. Like, you have to have a deviled egg on this deviled egg plate.
Well, that's great. Well, don't ever let go of those.
No, no.
So, Eric, I want to ask you about your other grandmother.
Yes.
Mildred Council, Mildred Cotton Council, I think was her full name, and Mama Dip, who is kind of a legend
in
the food world.
She is.
But I think there are probably people listening who don't know her story, and they don't know about her career and her restaurant and the cookbooks and everything else she did.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if you could kind of, you know, give me like a short version of her story and the impact that she had in the food world and in her community.
Absolutely. I think, you know, she also was a beacon in her community as far as pulling as you climb. So she started her own restaurant in the late 70s. She only had enough money to serve breakfast, 1977, I believe, 77, 76. She only had enough money to serve breakfast, but she bought the things for breakfast, made enough money to buy things for lunch, served lunch, bought the things to serve dinner, and the rest is history. I love that part of her cookbook that she put in there. And just, she was a beacon, Mama Dip's there for over 50 years.
And this is in Chapel Hill,
In Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I'm not too far from UNC Chapel Hill, where both my parents went to college, which is how they met. But yeah, so she was a soul food, I guess would be the term that a lot of people would put on it. But it was just your basic country cooking, meat and three, fried chicken. Her hush puppies were probably the best thing. I always loved hush puppies and sweet potato biscuits. So she had the restaurant in a smaller space, and then she bought the land and built a bigger restaurant right across the street in the 90s, and just fed everyone from presidents to Dean Smith to Michael Jordan. You know, but as I was growing up, She just was like your grandmother who had a restaurant. Once I got older, I knew she wrote a cookbook and things like that. And I remember coming to my high school graduation and someone saying to me, I've seen her on TV before. I was like, who? You know, this was in the 90s. I was like, my grandma used to be on TV? Yes. I mean, she had been on TV. And I think now when my kids will hear something about me, they'll be like, your mom?
You did what?
She was like, my son is very good. He's like, did you do something recently? People ask me about. So it's like, I guess it's full circle. Yeah. But yes, my entire youth and just seeing her from a perspective of someone who worked every day, put her heart and soul into something. And when people will say, oh, I used to love to go to your grandma's restaurant. She was always sitting out front and greeting people. You know, that type of feeling, just so she took pride in everyone that was coming into her restaurant, wanted to make sure she spoke to them. Mm. I love to hear that. Literally everyone who mentions her to me always mentions that. And it's just those small things make such an impact on people's lives. So you're feeding people, you're also going out and talking to them and engaging with them. And she was the daughter of a sharecropper. So the farm to table story was something that was always there, not just with her, but even on my mom's side, it was just always farm to table. It became, you know, more known, I guess, as mainstream or whatever. I'm just like, well, that was all I ever had. Like, that's one of the reasons why I can make jams from scratch and things like that. Because, I mean, my grandma didn't go to a grocery store like that. You can make it. Her story is definitely something that has driven me on the restaurant side. Now that I've ventured into this entrepreneurial and, you know, culinary space, in telling the story and making sure that story reflects in what you serve and the way you carry yourself and treat people also.
Yeah. I mean, I just love that picture of her sitting, you know, out front and greeting people.
Yeah, she had a little booth. When she passed away, they had a little sign engraved on that booth, you know. And I have a picture, I think I posted on Instagram years ago. You know, one thing I'll say about Grandma Dib is she encouraged everyone. Like, everyone is kind of been able to grow off her legacy. So like her children, my Aunt Spring is writing a cookbook. My Aunt Niecy has a cake mix, Sweet Niecy cake mix. My cousin Tanya has restaurants in North Carolina. So like, you know, a lot of them created their own success as well. So I think that her legacy lives on.
That's amazing. She's just kind of planted all these seeds.
Yeah, you know, whether she knew flourishing. It, yeah. She was intentional in doing that or not, she did. You know? And so, yeah, it's great.
So Mama Dip's closed its doors. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little confused on how this happened, but I think it closed in 2024. But then really, even just this past summer in 2025, it seems like it finally stopped.
Yeah, they were
serving.
Still doing,
is that right?
Yeah, serving, you know, dishes. And I think they were still doing like catering things, but officially closed in 2025.
What was the reaction in the community when Mama Dip's finally closed? I know there was kind of a reaction across the South and there were all these accolades, and stories about the impact of the restaurant and her career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there in Chapel Hill in that community, just tell me a little bit about that, aspect of it and how people responded.
Yeah, I mean, I don't live in Chapel Hill.
Right. I will say, but you spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I have. I think the reaction from what I have gathered was if something was coming.
Yeah.
So if it had been an abrupt closure, I think the reaction would have been a little differently. Obviously sadness, because this is an institution. It wasn't, just like Crook's Corner, you know, it was always already hard to see her pass, but then to see the institution she grew leave as well. You know, in any case, I think that always sort of causes this sort of sadness, I would say. I kind of picked up on and just, you know, what's next, I think was mainly the question. I think from what I've seen, I mean, it was positive. Everyone wants to know what's next. And I love that they asked me. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. Because so many of us are doing different things or are in the culinary world. So I think what I've seen lately is just like, well, what's next? Like, what are you guys going to do next? Or what are they going to do next? you know, and that my question too, but ultimately that'll be up to her children, my aunts. But I mean, the legacy is still there. The love is still there. The customer base is still there. Yeah. So, you know, I think they could still definitely continue on in a different iteration, just probably not in such a biggest space as what they have.
Well, I love that so much of what you're doing is a tribute to her.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And a tribute to that council legacy.
Absolutely. You know? 100%. Yeah. Of all the pictures on the wall and people ask me the story, because I have two from my mom's side and, you know, my dad's side, Grandma Dip, and my aunt is a picture of Southern Living. They did a piece on us, and it's a beautiful photo they took. It was me, my cousin Tanya with the restaurant, my aunt Nisi with the cake makes a mom spring, has a cookbook coming out.
Against that blue background. I know that.
Yeah.
I think that
so
one,
that's
yeah.
hanging in the restaurant, and people always will ask, this is the house that Mama do it, Bill. It's amazing.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about your journey, and particularly in the last few years. I mean, you had a little bit of a detour. For a long time.
The reluctant restaurant owner. Yeah, you know, I guess the flip side of being exposed to all of that, I was never going to open a restaurant.
You'd seen enough. You knew how hard it was.
No, I wasn't going to do that. Yeah. You know, I worked in there. When I was in college, I did bartending, restaurant. I mean, even once I graduated college and was working full time, I had found myself as a single mother before I got married again. So I worked, you know, at night at Cheesecake Factory, waiting tables. You know, I was like, cool. But this is solidified. I'm never going to, you know, venture off. But I would cook at home. I would do Sunday suppers because it still calmed my nerves. There was something about cooking for people, having people over, that just, I don't know, calmed me or brought me a sense of normalcy, you know, and especially after my mother's mom passed, you know, because Sunday dinner was such a big thing, you know, so I just was like, okay, well, I need to keep doing this, even if it's just in my house, even if it's just friends. And that kind of grew until I started writing a food blog. And I mainly did that because, again, my mom's mom developed Alzheimer's. So I just wanted to put down the stories that I remembered her telling me along with the recipes. I did that briefly. And I started, you know, doing more Sunday suppers when I moved to Atlanta. I moved from Charlotte to Atlanta for work originally. I got married again and we were doing bigger Sunday suppers. So I ended up meeting a lot of people in the industry in Atlanta. I mean, it just sort of circled around and started doing Sunday supper pop-ups. We'd just sell tickets and the people would come. The Garner girls, they had pickles, but they had a beautiful test kitchen with a long tablecloth table and all that. So I did a couple there. I met the guys that own Kimball House and they became really great friends and supporters. They allowed me to pop up in their beautiful space, which is amazing because they barely knew me. That was over 10 years ago, which is crazy to me. That just sort of grew organically into me one day meeting a gentleman named Brian Furman, from B's Crackling Barbecue.
A barbecue genius.
And he said, hey, you know, I'm up early. I'm opening a restaurant in Atlanta. You want to do like breakfast pop-ups here or biscuits? Your biscuits are great. So actually the first pop-up we did, was a tribute to Black History Month, and we had another black chef, Mike Sheets was there. And then the following weekend I did the first breakfast pop-up. The biscuit had fried chicken. Brian had his brisket that we were adding onto potatoes. It's very simple, biscuits and gravy. We sold over 1,000 biscuits. I remember leaving that day and I said, wow, this is not at all what I had planned. The rest is history.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Brian's place ended up burning down, but at that point I had, you know, a pretty decent following. So I was still doing corporate catering. Mind you, I was still working.
You were doing two jobs.
Yeah, I was doing two jobs. So I did Salesforce and I just sort of did the consulting side. So a lot of those jobs were in the evening once people had gotten off the system.
Yeah.
So like in the morning, I'm making biscuits. I'm doing a couple of those gigs. And then COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And well, this was kind of right before COVID. I got an email from a gentleman. They were like, you know, would you be okay with dropping off biscuits to my team? Because I had done a couple catered breakfasts while we're on these Zoom meetings. That was the very beginning of the we need to stay home. And I was like, no, I'm not about to ride around Atlanta dropping off biscuits. My daughter was home from college and she said, yeah, let's do it. You know, because then you're 18, everything's easy.
Why not? Yeah.
Why not? And so we did that. And again, the rest of that was history because the last delivery I did for that, it was 115 deliveries in 2 days. And I remember telling my husband, like, okay, I think maybe I should look at something else. And he was like, are you sure? Because you have been very, very, like, I am not opening a restaurant. And the people who have known me from the beginning of this journey always say, like, I saw Dwayne Nutter yesterday. He was like, I just have to laugh sometimes. Yeah. Cause it is true. I laugh at myself. And so in 2020, right before 2021, we opened a little small stall in a food hall across from Croc Street Market. And again, the rest is history. Now we're in a almost 3,000 square foot space.
Wow.
And
it's
that's
Bomb Biscuit Company.
And we started with just plain biscuits and that grew to sandwiches and fried chicken biscuits. And now we're a full-fledged brunch restaurant.
Well, last question for you, Erica.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to be Southern?
You know what? It means the world to me. I feel like it has shaped my life. It shaped the character that I have, the way I interact with people. You know, I traveled before when I was doing corporate America things, but even now with the Foodways, like even went to Aspen and I'm just like talking to people like, and they're like, oh, I love talking to you. I can tell where you're from. You know, your accent is great. We just have a way of weaving the most beautiful tales. We can tie anything into anything. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really Southern skill. I would never live anywhere else than in the South. It means everything to me because it's shaped who I am, where I am, and where I'm going. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I love that. And congrats on everything happening at Bomb Biscuit Company, and congrats on the book.
Thank you so much.
Which got nominated for a James Beard Award and everything else you have going on. And thanks for being on Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sid.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Erica Council. Southern Living is based in Birmingham, Alabama. Be sure to follow Biscuits and Jam on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And we would love your feedback. If you can rate this podcast and leave us a review, we would really appreciate it. You can also find past episodes and more online at southernliving.com/biscuitsandjam. Our theme song is by Sean Watkins of Nickel Creek. I hope you'll join me next week when we'll have a special holiday edition of the show featuring some of our guests from this season returning to talk about their own holiday traditions. And then the week after that, come back for my discussion with the actress, comedian, and author, Fanny Flagg. We'll see you then.